What's up, Brainiacs? Hope you're enjoying the podcast. Just a programming note that every Monday at 9 Central, you can join me, Andrew Cieslak, and Josh Custodio for Monday Night Program. Come hang out with us as we continue to build the WBCW universe using Fire Pro Wrestling Promoter Mode. Who should we sign? What matches should we book? Join us for the only professional wrestling program on Monday nights. That's Monday Night Program on twitch.tv/wrestlingbrain.
Comics in the combat zone, comics in the combat zone. Usually we make you laugh, but now we're watching guys get stabbed with light tubes.
Hey there, everybody, and welcome to Comics at the Combat Zone. This week, talking CZW Take One, June 8th, 2001, in Sewell, New Jersey, Soccer Champs Arena. Ben, the show's called Take One. What did you take this to mean?
I don't know, actually. I don't like it, a very mysterious name. Maybe they did. Maybe a lot of the commentary was done in one take, because there's a lot of decisions I would have made about the commentary if they'd maybe had another chance to do it.
Well, it's weird. So we do find later in the show that this is the first television taping, and they keep saying we're on TV live right now. And I assume that
your ears are insane, because the audio in this, the audio is still so bad.
Well, I take it to mean, like, closed-circuit television, where, like, if you go to, like, channel 2 at, like, 4 a.m., be able to watch this in New Jersey.
Yeah, like, the Wayne's World shows right after.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, public access.
Because the show goes almost 3 hours. Like, it's so random. I'm like, they can't have this amount of time blocked off in television. Like, it doesn't make sense
for
at all.
CZW. Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, we open in the arena, so that there's no preamble, no Dewey Donovan angrily in the parking lot, just straight to the arena, which I didn't mind on this show, given it was fucking 2 hours and 48 minutes.
Yeah.
And we get our match entrances, like, no preamble even from Gargiulo or John House. And the first out is a guy named Bar Cam. And this gave me flashbacks to when
we've seen him before.
Yeah, they just bring out the bar. Back when Zabar was Bar, if you listeners remember.
Yeah, because this guy's been out before. Bar Cam, but that's his name. But I thought it was like, you know, they have Cutler Cam in AEW. I thought he was a guy called Bar who was filming things, but his name's just Bar Cam.
It was so weird.
Yeah.
And the commentators tell us, like, this guy is having his first ever pro match to open our first ever TV taping. And I'm like, who would make that decision?
Zandig.
It's like the very first, like, important show. And, like, we're going to let this guy have his first match.
Yeah.
Like, why would that be your opener? And then next out to new generic rock music, accompanied by Smack Mac and John Dahmer, it's Eddie Valentine. So this is the new era. This is take one of the first match. Bar Cam versus Eddie Valentine. Were you excited?
No.
No, me neither. I don't know. I even like John Dahmer more than Eddie Valentine, because at least he's, like, funny in a bad way sometimes.
Yeah.
Like, Eddie Valentine is so and he looks even more generic than ever. Like, he's got this, like, 80s singlet on. And he's got, like, a shaved head now, and he just looks like shit.
Yeah, he looks like the third Briscoe.
Yeah, sort
like
of.
Like the unhealthy Briscoe.
Eddie Briscoe.
Yeah.
And the match is just super, like, generic, like, boring opening with arm locks and arm drag reversals. They do, like, this sloppy exchange of pinfalls. And it's annoying because everyone in CZW starts the match the same way, but usually it's guys like Trent Acid or Amazing Red who can do it, like, pretty spectacularly. This would be like if you and I tried to do a pinfall exchange.
Like, I think it's worse, because I think we would be funny. Like, we would just be like, it would be funny to watch. But this is like when, like, you're playing a WWE game or a wrestling game, and you're, like, doing the tutorial moves on a wrestler who's standing still.
Yeah.
Like, you could tell us if, because, like, they'd stand still. He's like, okay, now I'm going to do this move. And then, because anytime they tried to add a bit of speed to it, it would just be hilarious. It would
and
just
then the
be
game
so
lags.
Bad. Yeah, it would just be so bad. Like, you've learned all these combos, and then as soon as you go online, you just get obliterated. Like, it just felt like that. And they did keep going, like, they're products of the CZW training. Like, it feels like they're products of the CZW training camp.
No kidding. Like, Barcam at one point gets thrown outside, and then on the way back in, he hangs up Valentine on the top rope. And you're expecting, if this is any other wrestler, they might springboard in, they might run in and hit a spear or a clothesline. Bar just sort of stumbles in. It's almost like he forgot what he was doing.
Yeah.
So then he just gives sloppy punches, and he chokes him on the ground, like Undertaker style. This reminds me of, like, Nate Hatred's first match, But Barkham has none of the charisma, or at least the look of Nate Hatred.
Yeah, like, at least put some face paint on.
Yeah, just terrible looking.
Or smoke a cigarette or something.
At one point, Barkham, he does a pop-up stunner, like Kevin Owens' pop-up powerbomb, but instead of a powerbomb, he turns and stuns him.
Mm.
And the crowd, like, boos. Like, they're insulted that a wrestler this shitty just hit a Stone Cold stunner.
I mean, this is the first match after Best of the Best, at, you know, a CZW high.
This is the worst of the worst.
Yeah, this is really bringing, like, reminding you what the level's at.
Yeah, in the same arena as well. So Ed ducks a clothesline, hits an STF, sending Barkham back outside. Then he gets in Smack Mac's face, so Barkham does, and he just turns around and Dahmer clotheslines Barkham's head off, just in right in front of the referee. Hartog's like, hey, get out of the way, Dahmer, stop doing that. Like, no DQ whatsoever. And then Valentine does an old school, like he does the Undertaker old school walking across the rope, and he walks from one turnbuckle to the other. But he's, like, holding the guy's hand. So it's sort
yeah.
of like, the fans are cheering, like, this is impressive. But I feel like it would be sort of easy if you're holding a guy's hand.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. I've never walked the ropes.
Let's try it one day.
Yeah, we need a ring.
Yeah.
And then instead of the old school where he hits the guy, where does the Undertaker thing, he actually does a bulldog, which looked okay. And then Ed Valentine gets thrown outside. But Dahmer and Smack Mac catch him. And lob him back in, and he hits his palm strike that we're used to seeing, and then a top rope leg drop for the win at 7 minutes and 22 seconds.
I hate the palm strike so much.
Why?
Because it's just an awful move. Like, the commentators are like, that palm strike will take your head. And it's like, no, it wouldn't. Like, they're like, it probably takes as much out of him. It's like, what damage is that going to do? I don't know. Like,
well, you know, I've seen, like, when Jushin Liger does it, or even I've seen a bunch of Japanese wrestlers do it where it looks good. Eddie Valentine cannot pull off the palm strike at all.
No, it doesn't look good. I don't enjoy it. I'm glad this match was over. Although I did forget to mention that at the start of the match, the guy has tearaway pants on, but he tears off his pants to reveal only ever so slightly shorter pants. It's like the most useless tearaway pants moment ever. I'm just like, okay, bro. I knew this was going to be bad.
Away, and then it
yeah,
was
he just kept going. Yeah, it
like
was
a
like
Russian doll.
A Russian doll of pants, yeah.
So yeah, then they all leave without incident. I mean, this match went too long. It sucked. Just a terrible way to start any show.
Yeah,
let
sure.
alone your first TV taping. And then we cut, and out comes the prodigy, Tom Marquez, a four-year veteran. I love that it's like a four-year veteran. That's
a prodigy.
No time at all. He's also the prodigy.
Yeah, he's also a prodigy of 4 years. Can you be a prodigy veteran? I feel like at that point you just wasted potential. If you're a prodigy if you're a veteran of being a prodigy, I feel at that point you just missed the boat.
When he looks like a bouncer at a nightclub,
yeah,
he's pretty built like a rugby player. But then he's got this stringy, like, surfer hair skullet. Like, I can't even describe his hair.
He looks like if which one's the warthog in Lion King, Timon or Pumbaa?
Pumbaa.
If Pumbaa was like turned into a human,
yeah.
I feel like he'd look like him.
But less smiley. He looks very stern.
Yeah, he does, yeah.
And then we hear the same familiar generic rock music we just heard as John Dahmer is back out with Smack Mac and Eddie Valentine. So we're getting the most underrated tag team in CZW, one match after another. And they say that John Dahmer is just off a Big Japan wrestling tour. To think that he was flown out to Japan to wrestle is unbelievable.
Yeah, it's insane. I'm not, his face as well looks like a PS2 texture. Like, it's so weird and squashed. He looks like the Max Payne, like, not as good as the Max Payne one, but I'm just, it's very odd, his face.
Yeah, so Tom Marquez grabs the, I'll just call him the Prodigy, grabs a microphone, and he does a promo calling John Dahmer fat, which is funny. Because he's also, like, the same size,
well.
But
yeah.
Tom is just at least jacked, I guess. And he's like, but you got Smack Mac there, I brought my own backup. And music is meant to play, but the sound just keeps cutting out. And it's clear there's, like, some sort of technical issue. So the fans start chanting, fuck the sound guy, which is pretty funny. And then finally, a guy we've all been missing. Out comes Jimmy Washington with Natasha. And he's dressed like, I don't even know what he's dressed
he's
like.
He's got, like,
Purple Matrix outfit?
Yeah, purple outfit, like looking like the Joker from Suicide Squad. But he's like also wearing the dog collar as well from a priest, so it's like he's still doing that shtick.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought he was like all American. I was so upset.
I wrote here groan.
Yeah, just like, this is your backup?
It's like, and man, Jimmy Washington versus Smack Mac in the battle of just the shittiest managers ever. Because Mac now cuts a promo putting his team over. And then the commentators at this point, like the match begins, and the opening line is, these might be the two best pure wrestlers to ever enter CZW. The Prodigy, Tom Marquez, and John Thomer.
I don't even know. I was hoping that you were going to do like a side profile. I thought it would. Tom Marquez was going to be another surprise big guest.
No, he's. I've never heard of this guy.
Yeah, no.
I doubt we see him ever again.
Yeah, no, it's insane. So I was just like, oh, okay.
So this match, the same way, it starts the exact same way the last match did, with arm drag reversals and shit. But at least these two guys did look like much smoother. I don't know if it's just because we saw a way shittier version like 10 minutes ago. But this looked way better, at least. And then they begin the test of strength. And they end up doing like a double, like impressive double bridge. You'll see luchadors do sometimes, which I was like, what the fuck is this? And then finally, Dahmer gets him back up and hits a hammerlock suplex for a big pop. This was sort of a big beefy guy match, which I thought like they at least matched up well. All things
considered. Marquez, you know, he's another one in the pantheon of big oily boys.
Mm-hmm. Dahmer misses in the corner, allowing for a flash cross body from Marquez, which totally didn't expect it from a guy his size. Then he follows it up with a dropkick and an overhead suplex of his own. Smack Mac distracts the Prodigy, allowing the disgusting high-angle Saito suplex from Dahmer. Like, he drops him just flatly on his head, not even shoulders.
No.
Like, head first, to the point where the crowd chants, holy shit. And you can tell, like, probably a mistake. Probably, like, almost broke this guy's neck.
Yeah.
Luckily, he's got a big, thick neck.
He's got a powerful neck. Yeah.
And then he picks him right back up for a fisherman buster. And then Washington distracts Dahmer, and he holds him as Eddie comes in, accidentally kicks Dahmer, allowing for Prodigy to hit the Dominator for a two count. Immediately after, Prodigy follows with a dragon suplex for the clean win here at 5 minutes and 4 seconds. So I was like, at least they're putting this Prodigy guy over. Maybe we will see him again next week. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. It was odd because it was like, I don't know. The count felt weird as well when they're doing it. I was like, is that even a three count? But he kind of did it. And I was just like, I'm glad this is over.
Yeah, the fans are just booing heavily as him and Matrix Jimmy Washington escape. And then the VD and Mac all reconcile and swear revenge. So I guess this feud will continue.
Hell yeah.
It's going to be Barcam and the Prodigy against VD.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to that.
Just shit.
Yeah, their second ever taping.
This has been a bad show so far.
Yeah, yeah.
This is a real crash back down to earth.
It was. It genuinely was. Like, I was like, oh, okay.
Okay, yeah. We're not just at a new level.
No.
Then we cut, and you know, I rarely read out the graphics that are at the beginning of every cut, but this one says the introduction of the CZW roster. And then the announcer reveals, and now, here's the CZW roster.
Yep.
And the official CZW music plays. Maybe we'll cut it in here or something, because it is like, I don't remember hearing this before. And clearly, like, Zandig just paid some shitty garage band to do a theme song. It's sort of similar to the ECW one. But it's the class of 2001. Very random. Every single person gets their individual intro from the announcer, from the Briscoes to Pondo to Jeff Rocker, Fujita. And then they're like, Rob Hartog.
I didn't know Fujita was like a full-on CZW wrestler. I thought he was like, I didn't know he was like considered part of that roster.
So I thought he was like an export from Big Japan. But you know, it's very common from Japan to like just send guys over to like American promotions.
That's insane. It's insane to have done that in 2001.
Mm-hmm.
To just be like, yeah, you're going to, I guess, work with CZW now. They're going to look after you. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like just leaving your Pokemon at the breeding center. Like, we'll pick you up in a few years. See how many levels you've gained. Followed by Sick Nick Mondo, Rob Hart, all these people. And then the song restarts because the roster just isn't done entering. Lobo enters, then Big Mac, Justice Payne, Wife Beater gets maybe the biggest applause of anybody. And then randomly, Lou E. Dangerously, a.k.a. Sign Guy Dudley, jumps in as the whole roster is surrounded the ring here. Have you ever heard of this guy?
No.
So he was just one of the Dudleys. Like, he's technically Sign Guy Dudley.
Oh, okay.
He'd come out with the Dudleys in ECW and have different signs up that were like insulting the other wrestlers. And then eventually when he gimmick changed to Louie Dangerously, which is just a Paul Heyman knockoff gimmick.
Oh, okay.
And so the fans are just shitting on him. he's in the ring about to like try cut a scathing promo, and the microphone just isn't working. It's like a comedy of errors here. And then he finally does cut a promo. And it's funny because the sound quality is such shit in this, but like, if you can tell who the decent promos are because they're able to like enunciate and make it work. So this guy, you could actually understand what he was saying, but he doesn't talk for long because he attacks this roster for being no talent losers. And it's so funny, like, Zandig's booked this so many times. It's like when Pastor Jim debuted like shows ago, where he's like, he just book someone to come out and insult people with no recourse. Like,
yeah,
like the only way that the only result would be them getting fucked up. And it's like they're obviously just booked to do this. And so Zandig himself comes out wearing the leather jacket and the classic jeans, and he just beats the shit out of Louis. And then Rick Blade enters the ring, beats him up, then Lobo, then Gage, then even Justice Payne enters, and they all just beat the shit out of him and send him packing. And it's like these four pillars of CZW are left in the ring with Zandig.
Yeah, it's hard. I mean, I guess they book it to be like, oh, this represents everyone who hates us. Because, like, the crowd hate most of the roster, to be fair. Like, the crowd are, like, probably like, yeah, about 3% of the roster we quite like, but the rest you're right about. So it is, like, a vanity thing from Zandig just to be like, I'm going to beat up this representation of all my own insecurities.
Yeah, he always does this. And then he does this thing now where he's like, like, in storyline, he's part of the big deals. He's, like, the top heel of the company. But sometimes he wants to play, like, the magnanimous boss who, like, is paying homage to his own company.
Yeah, I don't know where Zandig is half the time in terms of, like, which faction he's in or whatever. At least Bischoff was like, yeah, I know, like, NWA are cool, so I'm just going to join them. Like, NWO, yeah. Sorry.
Yeah.
He'd be sick if he joined NWA.
If he joined the NWA.
Yeah, but he joins them, and he's like, right, I'm a part of it. Whereas Zandig is like, well, I guess I'm, you know, the leader of the Hate Club now, and then I'm doing this stuff, and then I'm moving over here, and actually I'm the big deals. It's like, just pick a side, mate.
It's weird. He wears many hats, and he's like, no matter how we all feel about each other, nobody better represents the company than these four men here, including Justice Payne, his, like, blood rival. Like,
yeah.
The guy he's just been at the throat of for, like, months and months. And so it's Rick Blade, Lobo, Nick Gage, and Justice Payne. CZW wouldn't exist without these four motherfuckers. And then he's like, so in the spirit of that, we're going to make a historic four-way tonight between these four guys. Just for no title, no, like, reason. Oh, sorry, no, the winner does get a CZW world title shot. So at least there are some stakes in the game here. And then he says, time to start my show. And then does, for some reason, a 10-second countdown. He's like, oh, we're going to count to 10.
I wonder if all the stuff before this hadn't been filmed.
Yeah.
So maybe this was the start of it. And that's why they put those matches on first, because I don't think you would open with that.
Oh, maybe, yeah.
Yeah, like that's why there's the countdown before they start filming whatever. It's very funny as well, because they're describing who's got the titles and stuff, and they're like, Justice Payne, the only man to hold the tag team titles by himself. You're like, that's not. Yeah. How, that's no, he was
you
in a tag team.
About that.
Yeah.
It's sounds
a weird,
like dad booking.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then at the end of the 10-second countdown, he yells, CZ fucking W.
Yeah, that's pretty sick.
And the whole crowd chants CZW as the roster just heads to the back and we cut. It's just fucking random.
It is weird. It's like it was quite a long section as well.
I knew as soon as we saw Zandig, it was going to be self-indulgent.
Yeah.
Just like total bullshit. And then we cut, and out first in a Slipknot shirt is Adam Flash.
Hell yeah.
And like, how relevant was Slipknot at this point? They probably
2001,
like,
yeah.
A very popular band, right?
Yeah, I think so. Especially, like, I mean, in terms of crossover with CZW, I feel like everyone in there probably likes Slipknot. But it's also funny as well because, like, you can see in the crowd that there's also a lot of people who clearly really like Eminem. They've got bleach blonde hair. They're like, they've got it cut like him at the top. Like,
a lot of Slim Shadys.
Yeah, a lot of Slim Shadys are knocking about. But yeah, I think Slipknot, I don't think they were, like, in public, like, massive publicly. Mm-hmm. But I think in those circles, yeah, I think they would have been a big band.
Yeah, it's like the same way that Pondo comes out in Juggalo shit and has his own, like, pocket of people. and then out next is the techno shit music as Nick, former CZW champion Nick Burke, comes out. It's funny, sometimes they link guys in this company for no reason, and they're just linked for weeks and weeks and weeks. I feel like we've seen Adam Flash and Nick Burke wrestle just a bunch of times, even though it was probably only once or twice.
It's been like, it's been twice. Was it, did they wrestle at Best of the Best, but in like a non, well,
no,
that was in the six-way, wasn't he? Wasn't Adam Flash in the,
I don't even know, it feels that way though.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the commentators cue up Ruckus, But before Ruckus enters, Flash and Burke just begin wrestling and the bell rings. And they're like, I guess Ruckus is taking a bye. Like, there's no explanation.
I hate that. Yeah, I don't know why they keep doing that.
Yeah, like he won the three-way coin toss somehow decided I'm not going to enter yet. But Burke and Flash do pick up where they left off, which is really fast offense. I was knocking how much we've seen it, but I do like these guys' chemistry. Maybe that's why they're stuck together. Flash hits a big Alabama slam on Burke, and then he tosses him outside. And then 1 minute in, Ruckus just appears, and he goes to handspring Flash in the corner, but Flash actually catches him out of the air and tosses him over the top rope too, which was a nice like swerve. You'd think Ruckus would come in and clean house. And
yeah.
Immediately is just thrown over the top to the outside. And then Burke rushes in and dives over the top on Ruckus. You think he's going to go for Flash. But then Flash gets on the top rope and dives onto both these guys. At this point, the pace is pretty high and the fans are pretty into this match. They wrestle towards the merch table in the back corner. And it's so funny because you can tell there's like this woman running the merch table and she honestly doesn't know what they're planning. So she just like runs away.
Yeah, it's probably someone's mom or something.
Just abandons the table.
I think this is definitely the opening match of the TV because this match is way and above better than what we've seen before. This would make sense because this is a good match.
Not to spoil, this might be the best match on the card. I'm not sure. We'll talk about it as the thing goes forward. But this was like, definitely outdid my expectations.
Because Ruckus does some Spider-Man shit for sure, where he runs along the wall. It's insane.
Well, at one point, it's weird. Like, so Flash goes to Irish with Burke, but they're almost like next to the wall already. And Burke does an immediate reversal, like essentially next to the wall, and just smashes Adam Flash into the wall.
Yeah.
Like, it sounds like a gunshot. And he fully leaves his feet and just commits to this.
It's good. It's really good.
Mm-hmm. But then he does the same thing to Ruckus. And as Burke turns around, Flash just power bombs him into the chain link fence. They go back to the ring. Ruckus hits his handspring elbow to Flash. This time he hits it. And then he turns around into a nice lariat from Nick Burke, followed by the Burkulator to Ruckus. Then Flash and Burke double spinebuster Ruckus, and then they do this lame spot where one tries to pin him, like, right in front of the other guy. And obviously he breaks it up, and then the other guy tries to pin him. It's just like, why would you even think you could pin him while the other guy's just standing right there? So this leads to Burke and Flash fighting to the outside, allowing Ruckus to hit the Badass, which is, of course, the triple handspring moonsault to the outside. Gets a big CZW chant. I don't think anyone's moveset is more, like, ready for chants than Ruckus's.
Yeah, he's crazy. He's very flashy.
It just takes one move, and the fans are like, fuck yeah.
Yeah.
In-ring, Ruckus misses a moonsault, which just looks brutal. And then he gets double chokeslammed off the top rope by Flash and Burke. And again, they both go for pinfalls and both break up each other's pinfalls. Then Burke hits a Burkulator to Flash. Ruckus breaks up the pin, then hits the Parker for a two count. Ruckus goes for a superplex on Burke, and Flash, it was like, does that thing where he tries to go underneath and hit, like, the Tower of Doom, and it's just the shittiest, sloppiest Tower of Doom ever. You've never heard a crowd deflate at a Tower of Doom spot like this. It just looked terrible. It allows Flash to hit the top rope leg drop on both guys at the same time. So you think he's going to hit the win. And then Jeff Rocker just enters the ring and destroys Adam Flash with a chair shot to the head. Like, breaks a steel chair on Adam Flash's head. It looks disgusting. He's also wearing, that tape on his shoulder. So they were saying that Jeff Rocker had a separated shoulder from the last show, which might be true because he did not have a match tonight. This leaves an opening for Burke, who sets up a chair seated, attempts the Burke driver, but Ruckus slips out and then hits his own avalanche driver onto the chair, then places it on top of Burke and hits his huge moonsault onto the chair on Burke and gets the win at 10 minutes and 15 seconds. The fans are super stoked for Ruckus. The commentators are calling this a major upset that he beat a former CZW champion. I didn't consider this an upset. I thought Ruckus was easily the biggest star.
He's better wrestler than both of them. Oh, I like Adam Flash, but Ruckus's moveset is insane. I really like Ruckus. It was a good match. I mean, Jeff Rocker's weird cameo, I guess. I don't know. Like, with the tape on his shoulder, looking like a robot. I mean, it was a good match. It was a fun match. I enjoyed it, and I was certainly like, oh, okay, like, there is room for improvement. Yeah, there is. This show might not be a total write-off.
Yeah, I actually thought this, I said this might have been the best of the night, but then I forgot this next match, because we cut, and out from Brooklyn, the full SAT, including Red, come out. And I was like, okay, this should be good. Whatever this is always good. And then we get a random team of Brian XL, Chris Devine, and Quiet Storm. So which of those names do you hate the most?
Quiet Storm's pretty, I don't like that.
Pretty bad.
Yeah, I don't, I've never heard of any of these guys. Have we seen them before?
No, none of them. So Divine, from what I looked online, Divine and Storm are both from Canada, and they look like twins. Like, they're not, but they sort of look identical. Quiet Storm, actually, from Vancouver. Shout out Vancouver, where I am also from, where the brain and the wrestling brain is based in. And then Brian XL is, he looks totally different. He's got a do-rag on. He looks like, he's like sort of the same size as Red. And then I looked it up, and apparently these guys started this company called the House of Glory in 2012.
Whoa.
So, yeah, I had no idea. Apparently,
is it still going?
I have no idea.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, Brian XL and Red, close friends apparently. So this was a six-way match, and whenever you get an SAT six-way, you just expect, like, not a lot of ring psychology, but just fucking crazy moves.
Yes, a lot of spots.
Mm-hmm. So Divine and Jose start with reversals, ending with a big fuck you from Divine. They do a monkey flip-off, where it's just like, they never release the hands and just keep monkey flipping each other all over the ring. And then it finally ends into fast arm drags into a stalemate. Quiet Storm tags in and holds his own in a nice reverse off as well. And then Brian XL tags in, as does Red, and they have easily the best reverse off of the night with just like a standing ovation from fans.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's like such an insane pace as well. Like this,
they've got such chemistry too.
Yeah, like this is what I mean when, you know, when I watched the first match, and you're just like, oh, they're just standing still, doing the moves. Don't like this is just like insane. Like it's crazy how much better it is.
Yes, exactly. Well, and then they start isolating XL. And they do the triple teams where, like, they knock both of his partners off the ring and then just start destroying him, where Jose has him in the surfboard. Then Amazing Red hits the double stomp, allowing him to, like, drop him down on his knees in the surfboard for Joel to hit the drop kick to the face. I love when they're just, like, fucking piecing this guy up and he has, like, no offense at all. Then Storm sneaks in his tag and then takes out the Maximos and then turns into a Yakuza kick by Red. I love when Red does, like, power moves like that because he's just, like, this tiny guy. And he always grabs a guy's hand and pulls him into the kick, which always looks good. And then Storm begins just eating unique triple team moves where, in this time, Joel has him in a Boston Crab and, like, Jose hits a leg drop on the back of his head and then Red drop kicks the other side of his head.
They work really well together.
And it's like, when it's like the guy's arms are like literally being held back, so it's like he's just actually eating kicks to the side of his head. Shit, like, there's no way for him to protect himself. And then Storm begins his own comeback. He fucks up Jose, fucks up Red, and then he gets speared out of the air when he's trying to do a springboard by Joel. And this gets a huge pop, and it looks just devastating.
Spears are cool. Like, Goldberg built a career off it, but spears are cool.
Anything where the guy's in midair and someone gets a move on him. But then this sets up a dumb spot where the SAT have done this before, where everyone takes turns missing a dive. So, like, one guy does a moonsault, but the guy rolls out of the way. Then the other guy does a leg drop, and the guy does out of the way. Like, all six guys miss a dive. And it always ends with Red hitting, like, a triple corkscrew just into nothing, which the fans, like, pop at. I just find it's, like, sort of after the first two guys miss it, you just know it's coming. And then it's just sort of convoluted. Even though, I mean, it's funny watching guys just fall into nothing. then the match breaks down into guys just taking turns hitting big moves. And then the partner saves after the pinfall. It's pretty formulaic, but fun, very fast-paced. Divine hits his awesome suicide dive to Joel, but then Jose moonsaults both of them, setting up for a storm tope onto everyone, followed by an XL Asai moonsault to the pile, and then finally Amazing Red hits his gigantic swanton to everybody. Again, it's almost like you can see how they construct the match. Like,
yeah.
But it doesn't matter because it's really fun at the same time.
Yeah, for sure. And that's, you know, that's the wrestling, right? Where you're like, yeah, I know this is all thingy, but it's so exciting to watch.
Mm-hmm. Storm and Joel ends. They do another reverse off, ending this disgusting release German suplex to Storm where he's just tossed on the back of his neck. And then all three members of the SAT dive onto Storm. And he's saved by the double drop kicks to Maximos from the outside from his two partners. They begin triple-teaming Red. XL hits the standing shooting star press of his own, which is usually Amazing Red's move. Then Divine suicide dives to the outside, but he's hit out of midair with a chair by Joel. And then, what do I have here? And then they put Storm on the top rope right after, setting up the dual Spanish fly from the SAT, followed by the Phoenix splash to Red, who just lands on his face. He sort of misses the mark, and it's like knee first on his face. And then they do this awesome triple pin like pose where the Maximos have 1 foot each on his chest and Red is on their knees with the arms
yeah,
up.
Yeah, disrespectful, but
looks
look
awesome.
Good. Yeah,
And they get the SAT get their win here at 14 minutes and 46 seconds. This was the match of the night, actually. I don't know what I was talking about.
It was very good, very fun, very, like, it was very intense, very fast-paced, like, that's 14 minutes kind of flew by. Like,
yeah, totally.
A lot of other wrestlers in CZW, a 14-minute match would be too much.
Yeah, it would be cancer.
Yeah, but this was very exciting to watch. And, yeah, it's always good when the SAC... I mean, it is... The roster is getting, you know, pretty healthy, I'd say, with CZW. There's a lot of people who can turn up and put on a good match. So, you know, that's exciting to see.
Yeah. And it's funny because, like, they say this is SAT's first, like, six-way like big win. And I'm like, I guess so. They usually do lose. But just have it doesn't really matter that they lose because they have spectacular performances.
Yeah.
But they're probably going to start pushing them from here on out.
Yeah, they must know they're good. Like, they must know. And, like, the crowd loves them as well.
Well, Amazing Red is so special, too. He'd be, like, a really tough prospect to miss at this point.
Yeah, he should be the prodigy.
Because you'd almost, like, Rey Mysterio had already been around for this point for a long time. You'd have to look at Red as, like, the next sort of Rey Mysterio level. Just, like, incredibly small, talented guy who can do anything.
Yeah.
We get our cut, and then out next is The Do with the Briscoes as this feud continues. The commentators are literally explaining, the Briscoes hate this guy, but they're trapped in a contract. And
yeah.
Gargiulo's like, they signed it when they weren't even legal. Like, they were like 17-year-olds.
Yeah.
Now they're just trapped in this Do's contract. Drew just cuts this awful promo. He purposely mixes up Jay and Mark, calls them losers, saying, you know what, you guys don't even get to wrestle tonight. I didn't even bother signing you. Get out of the ring. And then they give him the middle finger, and they decide to wrestle. And so we get a rematch of Jay versus Mark Briscoe. And I was sort of like, I didn't like this, because I just based on how incredible the match was on Best of the Best, I'm like, I understand going back
to
it right away.
It's a weird way to set it up.
But I'm also just like, there's no way they could top the last one, so why are we doing it like next thing? And just as I was saying that, they do their slow feeling out again, maybe for a minute or two. Then the match just goes crazy where Jay hits his insane J driller out of nowhere. And then Zandig just casually enters the ring, like, as they're still wrestling. And he's like, whoa, whoa, God. And he's holding a giant trophy, by the way, the Best of the Best trophy.
Yeah.
And he's like, whoa, whoa, this match isn't happening, guys. There's no way it'd be as good as the last show. So what are we doing here? And
I'm like, you relate with him.
Yeah, he was saying just what I was thinking.
Yeah, Zandig and Jordan.
And he's like, but you know what? We all in the back agreed. The Briscoes deserve this trophy.
That's so awesome.
Let's be honest.
It's so sick to like retroactively be like, actually, no, you guys get the trophy.
Yeah, Winger's probably back in Japan, but he wasn't allowed to bring the trophy with him.
Yeah, customs like were like, you can't bring that. That's too big.
Yeah, so just ridiculous. And then an irate dude grabs the trophy, and I'm like, oh, this is where they're going to destroy the trophy. But he doesn't. He like gingerly puts it down and then slaps Jay in the face. And then out of nowhere, Mama Briscoe enters
this
the ring.
This is so sick. I love this
The
so
crowd
much.
Loved it, too. They went fucking crazy.
This was like, this felt like Attitude. This felt like prime WWE shit of like his mum ran in. And I was like, this is so awesome.
And knowing the Briscoes, this definitely was their real mom. Like, I have no doubt
in my mind.
This is the real mom.
100%.
She slaps the Do. And then he grabs her by the back of the hair like he's going to fuck her up. And this is finally where the Briscoes snap. They just start beating the shit out of Dewey Donovan.
Yeah.
And that's when Gage and Hatred rush the ring. They demolish the Briscoes. Like, at the same time, Nate hits his Rikishi driver as Gage hits the Brain Buster. And then finally, after weeks, Nate Hatred grabs the trophy and just stomps it and destroys it.
Yeah, a bit anticlimactic that it was Nate Hatred that did it, but...
Well, and the fact that he just stomped it, I'm like, I thought someone was getting slammed on the trophy.
Yeah, Dewey was going to get taken out by the British. But I'm glad, like, this has been good booking, I would say. Like, this has been a good storyline.
This feud has been a long time coming, and it hasn't felt, like, rammed down your throat.
Yeah, and, like, you know, getting their mum involved. Like, you know, she's just a supportive mum of the brisket of her kids. So it was very fun. And, yeah, I actually, like, one of the rare times where a story segment or whatever you'd call it has actually been enjoyable in CZW.
Yeah, paid off. Other than I wish they hadn't teased the Briscoe versus Briscoe match. Like, it was just so weird when Zandig walked in with the trophy and was like,
whoa.
Oh, we're not wrestling. Here's a trophy. And then Zandig also just allowed this attack to happen. He didn't care at all that, like, the trophy was destroyed.
Zandig's so weird.
So then Dew obviously gets his licks in as the Briscoes are down, and the heels are going to leave, but then Gage stops Hatred, and he's like, let's give him one more. And they go back in and hit their moves again with a further beatdown, and then we cut. So that match is happening eventually, and I am looking forward to it.
I am, yeah.
I wonder if they put the titles on Briscoes.
I think after their match, like after how much excitement there'd been about them, I think it would make sense from a business perspective.
Yeah.
To be like, yeah, this is the match. We're going to put it on them because they're hot properties at the moment.
Totally. And then you could feud them with the SAT and just have great matches.
Yeah.
So out next in a Superman jersey and a blue sombrero, it could only be Madman Pondo. A returning Madman Pondo after that terrible barbed wire match he had a few shows ago. He gets on the mic. He's just barely understandable. He calls his own hat stupid, and the fans agree with him. And then he tosses it to the side. I'm like, who gave you that? And then he's like, you know what? Tonight, it's Pondo versus Mondo. Let's get hardcore. And then cue the fucking Papa Roach as out comes Nick Mondo. I thought this was going to be a great pairing. I was like, you know, they're willing to get hardcore. I know we're in Jersey where they're technically not allowed to use, like, real weapons and shit.
Yeah, I don't know if I was expecting much just because I know Pondo can't really... I don't know.
Pondo can barely move.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like, it's not going to be a back and forth, really. Because, like, Mondo actually does sick moves and does all, like, spots, whereas Pondo's just like, yeah, just staple, like, a cheese slice to my head. Like, that's the extent of his moveset. So, I don't know. I wasn't... Like, I don't know. I wasn't too excited. Like, Mondo, Trent Acid, or Rick Blaine and whatever, like, that's a proper matchup. This is, like, I don't know. Just wasn't really expecting much.
Yeah, I don't know. I sort of thought it could be great. I thought Mondo was just going to be a spot monkey.
Yeah.
And, like, maybe Pondo. Because Pondo's, like, as immobile as he is, isn't afraid to take crazy bumps.
No, yeah, absolutely. That's why he works with, like, in a match... With like, not with Lobo, but like Nick Gage. He works in it in like, I think when it's not just two wrestlers, when it's like three or four, because he'll take mad stuff and then there'll also be other wrestlers actually doing wrestling. But when you've just got someone who's, you know, he's actually has to prop up a wrestling match, it's not ideal.
It's so specific to be like, this guy's great in multi-man hardcore matches.
Yeah, yeah, he's really found his niche
on
CZW.
Yeah, it's just hilarious. So right away, they just start brawling to the outside. Pondo sits Mondo onto a chair and then dives off the apron, like through Mondo, through the chair. And then he drags him to the other side of the ring, almost like to show the other side of the crowd the same move. Sits Mondo on a chair. This time, Mondo gets out of the way, and Pondo just wipes out off the apron onto a seated chair. And that's exactly what I mean. Like, he's willing to just throw his body in a chair. It looks fucking brutal. Like, the chair just is destroyed under his weight. Back in the ring, Pondo is whipped into the corner, and then he pops up over the top rope and this is Mondo. I'm gonna get Pondo and Mondo just mixed up.
It's all right.
It's tough. Yeah,
that is.
If I'm talking about someone doing something athletic, it's Mondo.
Yeah.
And if I'm talking about someone like hitting someone with a stop sign, it's gonna be Pondo.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Pondo whips Mondo into the corner, and then he just pops up to the top rope and hits a springboard back elbow, which looks really good. He lays Pondo on top of a chair, but Pondo moves, so Mondo just top rope leg drops onto a chair, which just looks fucking brutal. Pondo follows it up with a huge stop sign shot for a two count. How much worse would a stop sign, or less worse would a stop sign be from just a chair to the head, do you think?
Depending on the chair, I think a stop sign would be worse.
Really, hey?
Yeah, because I think it's like...
It sounded like a gunshot when he hit him with it.
Yeah, and it depends on the chair. Like, the chairs might have padding on them, but, like, I don't think chairs are designed to be, like, sat on, so they're not going to be too, like... Like, a stop sign's going to be rigid. Like, that's going to crack your head. Like, I think a stop sign's going to be more brutal.
When it's funny, it's almost like the story of this match where Pondo, like, one thing works for him, so he goes for the exact same thing. And this time, again, Mondo ducks the stop sign shot and then thrust kicks it into Pondo's face. He goes outside and sets a table up out there, lays Pondo on the table, and then goes for a moonsault, a Mondo salt, they call it, which is like a flipping sort of like, it's like half a Phoenix splash.
Call it a Mondo salt.
There you go.
Yeah, it's better than Mondo.
Where he pulls his ass out.
Yeah, exactly.
But no one's there, so he just wipes out onto the table. And those are the spots I was expecting from Mondo this entire time. It was just like, the Pondo's not even involved. It's just him throwing himself through
the
shit.
Yeah, he's not even, like, Mondo's not even really doing that much stuff, really, like.
So Pondo throws Mondo back in the ring, then he grabs three chairs and makes a chair table on top of Mondo. Like, he doesn't lay Mondo on the chair table. He builds it above him, and then he puts the stop sign on his face, and Pondo goes to the top rope and does a tumbleweed through the chair table, landing on the stop sign and just crushing Mondo's head here.
Yeah, I would have expected his head to just explode.
Only Mondo would, like, agree to take a spot like this. It's ridiculous that he accepted this. Because, but you know, Pondo's, like, not agile enough to actually aim where he's going.
No, he's just going to squash you.
Yeah. And then, this is like where this show just falls to shit to me. So Pondo goes for the pin when out of nowhere, Johnny Cashmere appears and attacks Pondo.
Yeah.
At 9 minutes and 38 seconds. So Johnny Cashmere, the guy who was fired by Zandig a few shows ago, comes out here to defend Nick Mondo, who's in Zandig's faction. And I was like, okay, that doesn't make sense. And then out of nowhere, the wife beater appears, hitting the Chokenstein on Cashmere. When Zandig appears, attacking wife beater, throwing him out of the ring. And then Lobo hits the ring. He hits one clothesline on Zandig and then runs off. And then it just made no sense. This would be the only involvement from wife beater this entire show, by the way.
Yeah, apart from when he came out eating crisps at the start of the show.
Yeah, the start at the very beginning of the show.
Yeah.
It's weird. He's like easily the biggest star and they just didn't book him.
Yeah, it is weird. I mean, this is like prime bullshit stuff that the best of the best was kind of, we got away from in somewhat.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's very messy. It's like, I don't really care about the Cashmere story at all.
It's just the classic Zandig booking. You can tell he wrote this all in the day.
Mm.
Probably just high. And then he grabs a microphone and asks Cashmere, didn't I fire you? You don't belong here. You can tell, you just see him writing the script and it's got like spelling errors and shit like that. Just like, it's so nonsensical that Cashmere, what was he trying to like attack Pondo to like get in Zandig's good books? It makes him such a pussy if that's the case.
Yeah, it's very weird. Like, I don't know if he's defending. Yeah, it's lame. Like, it's so distracting.
Mm-hmm. So Cashmere grabs the mic. He says, I know the best wrestle in CZW and I do belong here. But Zandig, you and I see eye to eye. So he's like trying to align with him, and he's like, I want a fair shot to prove myself. And Zandig's like, you guys want to see Cashmere versus Trent Acid? And again, they just throw this match out, the match that should have been built like the same way Briscoe's and Hatred and Gage was built, that they just gave away randomly a few weeks ago. And then they cut to the music, we hit the chase, and then Trent Acid appears with Zabar, and we get Trent Acid versus Johnny Cashmere for Johnny's job that just got reinstated is on the line once again.
Yeah.
He was fired.
It's so stupid.
But he's rehired for this match.
Yeah, I can't follow it at all, like, what's going on with it. It's really stupid. It's like, Trent Acid and Johnny Cashmere have, like, had this final showdown about 8 times at this point. Mm. Like, yeah, it's not good.
What, if you remember last time, Trent Acid tried to, like, extend his hand and, like, embrace Cashmere and Zandig got mad at him, so I thought they were teasing the reuniting and maybe a face turn for Acid.
Yeah, to try and then take on Zandig and whatever, because then the commentators are like, because Wife Beater comes in and they're like, oh, Zandig, leader of the Hate Club, and it's like, what is going on?
Yeah.
Do you even know your own faction?
Like, yeah,
because well, I don't.
And that's a weird thing. So Cashmere is selling his back throughout this entire match, and they keep saying like, remember, Cashmere just took the Chokenstein from Wifebeater, like, not 2 minutes ago. So they're acting like taking Wifebeater's finisher is, like, just crippling this guy. Like,
yeah.
Anyone that takes that move is going to have a fucked up back.
Because then they're just going to do the match again, I guess, where Cashmere's like, well, I got attacked. And it's just like, oh, my God, just get over it. Just fucking do something, please.
Well, and again, this is the exact match we've seen where Cashmere's getting the better of Acid, and then Zabar just fully pulls him out.
Yeah.
Like, the entire time Zabar is just involved in this match, it's basically a handicap match.
It's just annoying. Like, sometimes the wrestling storylines, in wrestling shows, they do this where, like, the storyline just goes on and on. And initially, you're like, oh, man, I can see this going somewhere cool.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the Backseat Boys, you know, quite a famous tag team within that circle. They're breaking up and whatever. But, like, they just keep doing it. And you just get to the point where you're just like, this is...
I don't care.
Yeah, and the payoff's not going to be good. It reminds me of the AEW one with the cult, or like the reveal of the devil or whatever.
Oh,
where it's like,
yeah.
It starts off all right and you're like, oh, this could be interesting. And then it just goes on so long that eventually you're just like, I don't care what the climax is. It's going to be bad.
Yeah, there's no one you could show me.
Yeah, and it's just like with this where I'm like, I don't think there's a match or anything now where I'm just like, oh, I'm so invested. I'm just like, get on with it.
Yeah, even if they built a Kashmir versus Zandig, it's like, who gives a fuck at this point?
Yeah.
Like, Kashmir's clearly proven he's a pussy. He's tried to quit 3 times, but then demands his job back.
Yeah, no one likes him.
Yeah, he sucks. And so at one point, Kashmir, he's hit with a chair by Zabar, and then Acid brings a chair, and he hits him 3 more times in the back with the chair, really selling his back. Kashmir then goes to try suplex Acid, but his bad back won't allow it, so he eats a Yakuza kick to the outside. yeah, it's just fucking weird. So the commentator claims Acid's boot is loaded, by the way. The whole time, Gargiulo's like, look at his black boot.
Yeah.
You're telling me that's not loaded?
Yeah, what's in there? He might as well have the word loaded written on his boot.
Yeah. So outside, Zabar lays Kashmir on this 8-chair table on the outside, and Acid hits that bad trip, like 180-degree splash, which always just looks fucking brutal when he hits this, because the chairs just go flying. Like, chairs have no give at all, obviously. Back in the ring, Kashmir counters an Irish whip, then gets Acid up on the apron, and then brutally spears Acid through the ropes onto the chair table. This was at least like a really cool spot. They make another chair table in the ring near the corner, and Kashmir counters a superplex with a crazy tornado DDT through the chairs. And then he pulls Acid back up and does an alley-oop bomb onto the seated chair. He goes to pin, but Zabar just pulls the referee right out of the ring. Kashmir hits a cradle breaker on Zabar for this, rebuilds the chair table, sets up a top rope bulldog, but Acid hits an insane blue thunder bomb through the chairs off the top rope for the, not clean win, but just a pin.
A win, yeah.
A win at 7 minutes and 46 seconds. So Kashmir loses again.
Yeah, this is so crazy.
I was so sure he was going to win once they'd set up this stipulation the second time.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, yeah, it's just shit. Like, I'm just like, I don't... Like, and the problem is, like, the wrestling matches aren't bad. I'm just like, I care so little about this, and I don't want to see it again.
Yeah, I completely agree. And then Zandig announces Acid is the winner, and he gets in the ring. He's just mocking Kashmir. Kashmir gets the microphone and asks the crowd if I proved myself.
It's so pathetic.
Yeah, he's like, I think we know I proved myself anyway. And then he puts his hand out to shake Zandig's hand. It's like, why would you want to shake this man's hand?
Yeah, and the crowd are not going to be on your side.
Yeah, they're like, this guy's a loser.
Yeah, this guy is a loser.
And then so Zandig, instead of shaking Kashmir's hand, bitch slaps him.
Yeah.
And then he lifts him for the mother effing bomb. And that's when we hear Justice Payne's music hit. But apparently, like, Justice Payne, I don't know if he was, like, still oiling his body up. Like, he takes forever to come out.
Yeah, he's still oiling.
So Zandig's just holding this guy above his head for, like, 15, 20 seconds. And then eventually he realizes Justice Payne's going to take a little longer, so he just tosses Kashmir to the side. Just like, what a loser on this show, Johnny Kashmir is. Finally, Justice Payne comes out. He gives the mic to say, fuck you to Zandig. He puts over Kashmir. I can't really understand his dialogue, but you can tell he's just putting him over.
Yeah, he has done that a couple. And it's like, why have they not teamed up more then? Why is like Justice Payne and Kashmir not? Because there's been like two or three promos where Justice Payne has been like, this guy is the heart of CZ. And he's the only man I respect.
Him and Nick Burke.
Like, yeah, like why have they not formed anything? Like, it's very strange.
Well, then he does challenge him to a tag match. So he's like, you know what? Tomorrow night we're back in Smyrna. And it's going to be Trent Acid and Zandig versus Justice Payne and Kashmir for Johnny Kashmir's job. And it's like the job he just lost for a second time.
Yeah.
This is ridiculous. And Zandig's like, you know what? We accept, but it's going to be a 100 light tube death match. So at least we have that to look forward to.
Yeah, it is very funny to be like, I'm betting on this man's job. Like, I'm going to put his job up as the prize. Like, with no... Kashmir is not like, yeah or no. He's just like, okay.
So like, well, I didn't think I had one. I guess so. Cool. Yeah. Then, for some reason, Acid tries to cut a promo at the end of this, but he just gets the city wrong. He's like, yeah, we're going to fuck you guys up in Dover tomorrow. And Zandig pushes him, and he's like, we're in Smyrna.
That's pretty funny.
And he's like, oh, fuck. And then the crowd laughs at him, and we just hit end of disc one.
A bit of improv there from Zandig.
Yeah. Yeah, that was like most... That was 2 hours into the show, but I'm like, Christ, this thing has been dragging for me at this point.
It's a real shame as well, because they'd built up a bit of momentum with some good matches, and then just all this bullshit is...
It's Zandig every time. It's like the guy just who doesn't belong, you know?
In his own company, Jesus.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I know. I've worked in restaurants like this where everyone's having a good time and things are moving smoothly until the manager shows up.
Yeah.
And then they start trying to micromanage, and everyone's like, fuck.
They think they're in the Bear.
I just hate this person. Yeah. I never seen the Bear, but I heard it's good.
Yeah, it's just like CZW.
So the show reconvenes with a reckless youth entrance. And I'm like, oh, wow. Here's a guy we haven't seen in a minute.
Oh, yeah.
And then out comes his opponent, Minoru Fujita. I'm sort of like, this could be a good match.
Yeah. The commentary I did not enjoy the commentary on this match at all.
Oh, they don't like.
Yeah, one of them's very racist.
Yeah, that would be Hitman House. But
you endorsed last week. You said whatever he says, I agree with.
Don't put that out there.
Yeah.
I disagree with his thoughts.
I disagree with his thoughts.
Yeah. So they have this grappling exchange. Fujita locks in the submission I'd not seen, and John House is like, that's got to be some sort of Japanese submission. It's just like, doesn't even know the name of it.
No, yeah.
Then Reckless Youth counters and locks in a bow and arrow. But then again, there's no pin to it. He just breaks it eventually. It's like in a video game where if you don't make the guy tap, eventually your wrestler just lets go.
Yeah, he runs out of energy.
Yeah. The pace quickens with Hurricane Rana missile dropkick by Fujita. He gets on the apron and then tornado. He's on the apron and Reckless Youth is on the outside. And he tornado DDTs Reckless Youth into the sea of chairs, which just looks crazy. Then he jumps back in the ring and dives back out with a suicide dive onto the Reckless Youth. He's just fucking up the Reckless Youth here. It was cool. In the ring, Reckless Youth tries to lock in a dragon sleeper, but Fujita just flips out of it and hits a reverse DDT, and then a springboard splash, and then an armbar. It's all Fujita here. To the point where I'm like, Reckless Youth has got to be winning this, because Fujita's just getting 100% of this match here.
Yeah. And it is a good match as well, actually. Like, I was surprised. Mm-hmm. Like, well, yeah, because I like Fujita, but Reckless Youth is someone who... I know I've watched a lot of his matches, but I can't remember any. Like, he immediately leaves my mind as soon as he's out of the ring. Like, I can't remember much about him because he's very generic.
And he's just irritating. He's one of these guys who's constantly talking in his matches and is not funny at all. Just, like, hacky stuff. Like, at one point, he double legs Fujita and he just yells, "Welcome to America, boy." I'm like, that's like the classic thing loser wrestlers, like Rick Blade said the same thing to a Japanese
guy. Welcome
to
it is weird. Yeah, welcome. And I mean, the crowd aren't even being racist as well. Fair play to them. It's just the commentary team.
Well, I think the crowd have realized, like, wow, these Japanese wrestlers are so much better than the American
yeah
because they do appreciate good wrestling, at least. Reckless Youth goes to the top, hits just a top rope superplex from the very top rope. Both guys are down. And then goes back to the top. Fujita tries his own superplex, but Reckless Youth counters with a sunset bomb. And then he puts Fujita back on the top rope. They just keep doing, this is like the third or fourth top rope move again. But then Fujita counters this time with a face buster off the second rope. Fujita aims a lariat, but Reckless Youth goes under and hits this release German suplex. And then hits a Shining Wizard. And Gargiulo's like, he calls that the Shining Wizard. I think Reckless Youth might have been one of the first Americans to hit this move, actually.
Yeah, they really love it as well. Because, like, they call it the Shining Wizard because you're seeing stars. And I'm like, that doesn't make any sense.
Why? Wizards make stars.
Like, well, do they? Like,
it's on their hat.
Okay. Fantasia? Yeah, they have... Oh, right, okay. So this move is a Fantasia reference.
Yeah, okay.
No. It's just... It's very strange to be like, that's why they call it the Shining Wizard because you're seeing stars. Stars. I'm like, that's weird.
Yeah, Reckless Youth takes him to the top rope. He hits a cutter for two, then hits a moonsault for two. Fujita hits an elbow of his own, then a double stomp, then a dragon suplex for a two count of his own. They're just going back and forth here.
It's pretty good, actually.
Yeah. As it's heating up, Reckless Youth hits a straightjacket German suplex for a two, and then right after, he misses a moonsault, but no-sells it. Gets back up. Fujita hits a lariat, then a backbreaker, and then he hits this, like, I've never seen this submission. I don't even really know how to describe it, but they call it a reverse viper hold, where it's just stretching Reckless Youth's back, and he's forced to tap at 11 minutes and 33 seconds.
Yeah, it's a good match.
Yeah, Fujita, they are just giving tons of wins. I mean, he broke Trent Acid's winning streak, and now he's beating the Reckless Youth.
I mean, if he has come from Japan, I don't know if, like, he's going to go back or whatever, but maybe in the Japanese company that, like, loaned them or whatever. I don't know how it works. So, like, yeah, he kind of... If he's coming over there, then he's going to be a... We need him to win or build up some mystique as this great wrestler who made it in America.
Yeah, that's probably true. Because he even went really far in Best of the Best, if you remember. Yeah. Like, Pete Nick Burke. And John House here, in his final racist line, he's like, who's going to stop this Funaki? And, you know, Funaki from the WWF, you get it?
Mixed
them up.
Yeah, he does it. Yeah, because he's just like, during it, he's just going, chopsticks. And you're like, come on, bro.
Yeah,
like,
he literally is just referencing Japanese.
Yeah, just like, going, oh, rice could stop it. Like, what are you talking about? Like, it's just so stupid. It's just horrible.
Yeah.
Because, like, it has gotten better and better. No, the racism hasn't gone, but like the lack of it, like the crowd aren't as racist, they're not as homophobic, really. Like, if you remember back, it was awful, you know.
We
it
haven't
was really
heard
bad
F-bomb in a long time.
Yeah, they're getting better, especially on TV as well. Like, this is on TV actually. Yeah. Like, so I don't know, it's just awful. Like, I just don't enjoy that. Like, obviously not.
Of course. And you can tell he's just doing like a cheap Jerry the Lawler like impression. Yeah, sort of Jerry the Lawler, Jerry the King Lawler.
Yeah.
And it's just fucking lame. Yeah, it's like, and I feel like he's better than this, because I actually usually like John House as far as...
Yeah,
like,
you endorse everything he says.
I do not. But as a commentator, like...
You were texting me saying, oh man, the Fujita match, he pops, he is so funny, he pops off.
I'm going to use some of this.
yeah, this is dynamite.
No, but I think we've talked about how House and Gargiulo, given how shitty CZW is in this era, should be way worse at commentary.
Yeah, definitely.
And they're
actually
both pretty serviceable.
They can have good banter, and like, he's got a great voice for doing it.
Even if he's going to be this like ignorant, like Gargiulo should be like cutting him off or like busting him down.
Yeah, he does. Like, every now and then he'll be like, oh, come on. Like, come on. Ah, come on, man.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, I don't know. Just, it's so stupid. But yeah, really good match. Really enjoyed it.
And after the match, Reckless Youth goes to shake his hand. They hug each other. And then as soon as Fujita turns his back, Reckless Youth attacks him from behind. Heel turning.
Welcome to America.
Which is funny, because I'm pretty sure he debuted as a heel. He'd always come out and like insult the city or whatever. And then just randomly was a babyface. And
yeah,
then he's just back to heel. Who gives a fuck? Rick Blade rushes the ring and makes a save here, saving Fujita. And then Reckless Youth gets on the mic outside. He says, Rick Blade, this isn't your fucking business. And you know what? Tomorrow night in Smyrna, I'll take both of you guys on in a three-way. And Rick Blade's like, okay, I guess I'll also fight Fujita.
Like, yeah.
Not a handicap.
For Kashmir's job. This is for Kashmir's job as well, this match.
So then we cut, and it's main event time, as Nick Gage is out first with The Do. Out second, our Iron Man champion, Lobo, which, when is the last time he's defended that belt? I think it was that shitty Iron Man match.
Yeah, I don't...
Un-effing believable.
Yeah, I mean, I have begrudging respect for Lobo, because he takes hits, but I don't like him.
He always comes out and, like, raises his arms and does these, like, jumps, and he can barely get off the, the thing, and he's just so lame.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not a Lobo fan at all, really. And then the franchise player, Rick Blade, out third. And the commentary is actually doing a good job as each guy's entering, giving their history, like how they started. They make a point of saying all four of these guys were on the very first show, which if you go back in the comic and the Combat Zone archive, you will know is true.
Yes, the only way to verify it.
And then finally, Justice Payne enters, and he's easily treated as the biggest star of the four here by both the crowd and the commentary, and just how he looks.
And he looks good. Mm-hmm. He's looking juicy and oily.
And then he's also with Justin Case, who's just got no presence at this
point.
Like, I'd be so pissed if I was a wrestler on this roster and I knew Justin Case was making money, because he doesn't do anything in any of these matches. He's just there. Looks like a meth head. And no wife beater with him, no smack mac. And then Hartog makes the four come to the middle before he rings the bell, because Gage is just on the outside. And right away, as the match begins, Gage just goes back out to the floor to talk to the Do. Nobody's making the first move, so Justice Payne gets on the microphone, and he calls out Rick Blade for some reason. So Gage and Lobo just get on the apron, and they square off. So instead of just a classic four-way where they're all like tornado, it's a tag match, sort of.
Yeah.
Where it's two at a time. Which doesn't really make sense.
No, it's very strange.
It's like, why would you ever tag into the match, you know?
Yeah.
Let everyone else just beat the fuck out of each other. So they begin with grapples and reversals. And commentators are saying, like, we haven't seen this match since, like, the first couple episodes where Blade and Justice Payne were, like, feuding, if you remember.
Yes.
But Blade, every time Blade goes down, he kips back up. It ends with a stalemate. Then Gage tags himself in on Blade's back while he isn't looking, and he rushes Justice Payne, who ducks and hits this huge clothesline on Gage. It's funny. He just runs in with like a head of steam and just gets taken out immediately. Lobo tags out Justice Payne, who's pissed, but then Gage elbows Justice Payne and tosses him over the top. Lobo misses a chair shot on Gage, and then Gage drive-bys him in the corner. with just a brutal boot stomp with a chair in front of him. Gage is taunting Justice Payne and Blade, and it's funny because he taunts both of them, so they both come in the ring at the same time, and then Justice Payne tries to clothesline Gage, but he just clotheslines Blade's head off accidentally. And Gage and Justice Payne tumble outside as Lobo does his Undertaker dive over the top rope to both. Always shocking to see Lobo do this, because, like I said, we see him jump when he enters the ring, and he's got no athleticism whatsoever, but he somehow manages to clear the top rope with a suicide dive. And he's a short guy as well.
Yeah. He puts all of it. That's all he's got in him. That's his one move.
Yeah. Justice Payne outside destroys Lobo with a chair shot to the head. Again, just that thing where for some reason with Lobo, you're just allowed to lay it in extra hard. Like, it just looks awful. And then Gage comes over the top and sentons both guys. Gage, Lobo, and Justice Payne are all fighting towards the merch table, where Justice Payne and Lobo lift Gage and just lawn dart him into the chain link fence. And then they go over to those corner office areas we've talked about many times, like around the cage link to the other side.
Yeah.
It's just this weird office building thing. And then randomly, Rick Blade, I don't know when he got there or if he went the other way around. He's just on top of the building.
Yeah.
And all three guys get there, and he hits this running shooting star press onto all three guys.
It's sick.
Luckily, doesn't, like, smash his head against a guy like he did last time he did this move. It looked awesome. And that's Blade's whole like thing in this match. He just does insane dives.
Yeah, really. It is crazy.
Mm-hmm. Blade tosses Lobo into the sea of chairs as they head back towards the ring. Meanwhile, just as the camera goes back to Justice Payne and Gage, you see Justice Payne break a chair on Nick Gage's head.
They love going at each other.
They hate each other.
Yeah.
In the ring, you can tell there's like brotherly rivalry too.
Oh, yeah, that's what I'm saying. They love going at each other, like beating each other up and like really pushing the boundaries of what you should do to someone legally.
In the ring, Lobo hits a buckle bomb and an exploder to Rick Blade, but Justice Payne makes the save at the very last second. And then Blade ducks a Justice Payne kick. Justice Payne turns into a choke breaker by Gage, and Gage follows it up by catching Blade for a fallaway slam, then goes outside and just smokes Lobo in the head with an even harder chair shot than Justice Payne's one. Like, Lobo just has concussions at this point.
Yeah.
There's no way around it.
Yeah. Because also earlier in the episode as well, like, one of the guys had it, and they're like, I'm pretty sure he's got a concussion thing. It's like, you should be saying that every single match, because all of these wrestlers have concussions.
Yeah, as soon as they get hit in the chair with the head that hard, it's like, fuck, man.
Yeah.
In the ring, Justice Payne counters Blade with a sunset bomb in the corner for two. And then outside at the same time, Lobo lays Gage onto a table. The Dew cuts him off on the top rope, so Lobo just in the ring lays out the Dew. And they try to do the spot they did last week with Nick Mondo, where one guy back body drops him onto a guy who's standing on the table. Like, Gage is just standing up on the table. And then they throw Rick Blade over, but Gage just can't land the powerbomb. And the table gives out, and they just, like, it's a sloppy wipeout.
Yeah.
And the table doesn't break at all. It's just, like, the legs give out. It looks pretty brutal. The camera pans to the entrance, where Nate Hatred is just randomly setting up tables. And it just looks so random.
What's his job? Tables.
And then Gage is like leaning over the table that didn't break just a second ago. And Justice Payne comes out of nowhere with a top rope leg drop through Gage through the table. I don't even know if Gage was expecting it here.
No.
It just looked like so random. So the heels and faces are all setting up tables now near the entrances as the match sort of falls apart. They, like, forget that they're meant to be wrestling, and they're just setting up hardware.
Remember when they were tagging each other?
that is long gone. Lobo is laid on top of two stacked tables near the entrance on one side of the... Like, on the right side of the entrance ramp, Lobo's on two tables. And then on the left side of the entrance ramp, Justice Payne is laid out on two tables. Just super convoluted at this point. You can tell, like... It's more set up than, like, you know.
Yeah.
And then Blade points to the top of the arena as Gage does the same thing. And they both climb up to that wall that, like...
Insanely high wall.
Insanely high that we've seen Blade jump off of, like, two or three times.
Yeah.
But also Nick Gage is up there. And we're just like, what the fuck is this? You can tell they're planning on diving at the same time. So Blade does his Swanton Bomb. Picture perfect. Nails Justice Payne. Both tables break. Gage loses his balance and, like, falls backwards.
Yeah.
We don't see the fall, but you just see him disappear.
Yeah, it's pretty funny.
And you can tell he's just totally lost his balance.
Yeah.
And then he decides, fuck that, I'm not going back up there. So he just bails on this whole spot, comes back around, and just knocks Lobo off of one of the tables and picks him up and brain busters him through a single table.
It's pretty funny from Gage, to be fair.
You can tell, like, I don't think he pussied out. I think he probably got, like, really injured, like, because
he probably
fell so far and just adrenaline his way through this.
Well, at least Rick Blade nailed it and did look good doing it.
Yeah, although this would be the last we see of Rick Blade. Like, he did not re-enter the match. Which is hilarious.
Died on his way back to his home planet.
It is hilarious as we go through this. So Gage, of all people, is the first back to the ring. Justice Payne, who just went through the tables, is the second guy back in the ring. He perches onto the top rope, hits a blockbuster on Gage, follows it up with a Pain Thriller for the clean win at 19 minutes and 7 seconds. So the guy who just got put through two tables wins the match. The guy who put him through is laid out on the outside and gets stretchered out after this match.
Yeah, that's how it is, baby.
Yeah, that's why they call it a high-risk maneuver.
Yeah.
So winning this guarantees Justice Payne a world title shot against Zandig. And Nick Gage gets on this microphone that's, like, wired. I think the wireless one had, like, run out of batteries or something.
Yeah, it's been a bit iffy all night.
And he's like, despite how much I hate this motherfucker and how much I hate all you fans, I respect you, Justice Payne. Shakes his hand. And then both head to the back. And the last shot we see is, I thought they were putting him on a stretcher, but they literally just, like, alligator roll Rick Blade onto a table. One of the tables that didn't break. And then, like, six guys just lift up the table as the whole audience chants Rick fucking Blade. It's a sort of a scary scene.
Yeah, I was. I mean, because you never know, do you? But, yeah, I mean, he's... It was intense. Like, it was a drop. It can be the simplest things that gets people. So, yeah, it was kind of wild.
And this
wild.
Was a simple thing. Was
yeah,
this was,
dive. Yeah, crazy.
It's a thing, this man's about to have a child, too. And it's like, you probably
did announce that as well, didn't they? They were like, they're married now. Like, yeah. They confirmed that,
Shorty's,
you know,
at home.
He's not been cooked by Mondo, so.
But I just mean, like, to be paid, like, probably less than $500 for this and just a serious injury, like...
For the love of the game.
As your wife is expecting a child, it's just sort of irresponsible.
Anyway,
we cut to the credits, and that's mercifully the end of this show. What are you giving this one, Ben?
I think I'm giving it a 1.75.
I went 1.25.
Yeah, I think there is enough good wrestling in there. Ruined, though, by bullshit. Like, as ever. Like, very same old story. But there was some very good wrestling in there. And overall, I had an okay time. But yeah.
I thought it was just a crash back to reality after that last show, too. Whoop, there goes gravity. Yeah, it was just fucking, like... There was some fun stuff, but, like, all the fun stuff wasn't stuff we'd not seen before. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and it was buried... beneath, like, layers of shit.
Mm-hmm. Mondo and Pondo was really underdelivered. I thought the main event underdelivered. I felt like everything we'd seen before from these four.
Mm.
And, you know, I liked the violence. I liked the glass stuff. You're not allowed to do it in this arena. And the wrestling wasn't exceptional enough to make up for it.
Yeah.
The triple threat with Flash Burke and Ruckus was all right. Like, pretty good. And the SAT were great, as always. But, again, I feel like I've seen that SAT match a few times already now.
Yeah, I think these shows could be 90 minutes. Like, nearly all of them at this point could be 90 minutes. There's not many that have justified being over it. So, yeah.
But like we showed last week with Best of the Best, we can take a long show if it's a good show.
Yeah, we can like it. But, yeah, it was disappointing to see it, like, kind of come back down and, like, not have learned any lessons from what made Best of the Best so good.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there was some fun stuff. I had for, you know, Briscoe's mum coming in, but hopefully there's some... a bit of steam gathering and this next episode has some exciting matches.
Well, yeah, 100 Light Tube Deathmatch has me salivating. Yeah. I just love when they're in Smyrna because, you know, it's like...
Smyrna!
It's almost like they've pent up all the violence they want to get out at these shows. So when they finally get to Delaware, they're like, fuck it, let's get out of control.
Delaware.
Let's light a fire and almost burn down the building.
Yeah.
Anyways, this has been another episode of Comics in the Combat Zone. Thank you very much for listening. I've been Jordan Ducharme at FunnyJordanD on Instagram and Twitter.
I've been Ben Stead at PinkHoverboard on Instagram.
Please tell all your friends about this fantastic podcast and keep it tuned to The Wrestling Brain. We'll be back with you next week.